Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is J.R. Peters.
Yo.
And Pierce Bauer.
What's up?
Here at the Mediocre Movie Club, we, as a group, select three movies on various streaming services, rental services, and theaters, whatever we got. And we write about them on our website, mediocremovie.club. And then at the end of the month, we discuss those three movies. This last month, we watched three comedies from 2020, all of which were released directly to streaming, tragically. An American Pickle, Palm Springs, and Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga, all released on HBO Max, Hulu, and Netflix, respectively. We're going to start with An American Pickle. This is a movie that was released on HBO Now, directed by Brandon Trost and written by Simon Rich. He of Man Seeking Woman. Brandon Trost has no prior credits. This is a Seth Rogen movie where he plays two roles. He plays an early 20th century immigrant from, I want to say, Poland, who gets brined in a pickle vat and wakes up 100 years in the future, where his great-grandson, also played by Rogen, is struggling to develop an app. Initial thoughts on American Pickle. Pierce, why don't you start us off?
Well, I think it's good that we're, like, this is something I've been thinking about a lot over the years, about, like, streaming comedies and the kind of, like, death of the blockbuster in-theater comedy experience. And American Pickle is, like, a perfect example of, I think, what's wrong with comedies now. Like, I think the biggest thing that hurt the movie is, like, it feels low budget. It is very limited in its scope, or, like, its scale. Like, this movie is basically just Seth Rogen and another Seth Rogen. There's nothing beyond that, really. I didn't find it very funny, and I was mostly confused by the choices they made with the plot. Like, they really avoided making this into, like, a movie, it felt like, and more of just, like, strung together plots of what would be a season of TV, you know? Like, and I think it's emblematic of just, like, there's no more, like, large-scale comedies anymore. It's straight to streaming. And it's like two actors, or in this case one actor, and everything's filmed inside, and it doesn't really give you, like, an actual story. It just gives you, like, a bunch of bits, or, like, a bunch of episodes. And so this one, to me, to put it harshly, I think it's a failure, but an emblematic failure of something bigger.
JR, American Pickle?
I'll give you a more straightforward answer than a little less talking than my man Pierce did, because this movie just sucked. Straight up. It wasn't funny. Like, an hour into the movie, I had realized that I had only laughed one time. Like, and it was a chuckle. I was like, okay. You know, and then, you know, I get two laughs the rest of the movie, and it was just, there was nothing good about it. The plot, not good. Like, I don't have anything redeeming to, there's no redeeming qualities to this. And I will agree with Pierce that it just seemed like it could have been a reoccurring sketch on a TV show.
The only thing that made this worse is if it was Joe Rogan instead of Seth Rogen. That's the only thing.
Joe Rogan playing one of the two Seth Rogans, and they just pretend that they are related to each other. Even though one is a steroid-addled monster and the other one is a pudgy Jew.
The Pickles would be, like, brined in, like, creatine or something for his workouts.
Sure.
Yeah, there would be a scene where they go, like, bow hunting for elk, or, you know.
While he only eats meat for the entire time.
It would all be in there. It would be good.
They both take their weekly shits together because there's no fiber in their diet. I'm going to co-sign with these two preceding opinions. This movie is no good. I am a sucker for an immigrant story. At a minimum, went in hoping that this would be like a reasonably affecting American success story kind of thing. If not success story, then just like putting some amount of work in and seeing the fruits of your labor, even if it is this one schlubby guy, but at least he doesn't worry about his wedding getting, you know, ransacked by Cossacks. Mild incremental improvements in the stories of families and all that kind of thing. It's not even that. I agree that it's not funny. It's way more satirical than I thought it would be coming in, and the satire is just low-hanging fruit. It's hard to say punching down at like ironic, snotty New York hipsters, but it did also feel mean and stupid towards them as well. Just nothing to say about anything, really. And a lot of contrived conflict between the two Seth Rogans, Herschel being the younger one and Ben being the younger, coupled with a lot more contrived conflict of the city towards them. Yeah, this is just a complete misfire. Did anybody watch Man Seeking Woman, like in the FX show?
I've seen some of it.
I saw like the first episode. Simon Rich, that's his major claim to fame. The guy that wrote this show, he was the showrunner for Man Seeking Woman. And I looked into like the backstory of this guy. He is the cultural elite. Like his dad is a New York Times columnist and author, and he is one of those types who went to Harvard and was the president of the Harvard Lampoon and got in his first job immediately out of college writing for SNL. Or what a strong argument against the supposed meritocracy. Like this guy could write such a terrible, terrible script and get like famous people attached to it. And well, a single famous person, because yeah, Pierce, as you say, it's Seth Rogen and people I've never seen before in anything.
Literally nobody else. Like it's literally most like 90% of the movie is just Seth Rogen and Seth Rogen.
The two guys that bought pickles first.
Right. The one scene with Sarah Snook.
Yes. 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 Sarah Snook. Yes. Who I thought was very good.
But even then, the two guys that bought pickles, one guy was on a TV show that I can't remember what he was on. I just know I saw him in a TV show at some point. And the black guy got famous off of critiquing white people cooking food on YouTube.
That's like, kind of exactly what I thought about both of those guys. Like these guys kind of seem like they became famous through the internet, not necessarily through TV or movies. Like maybe they showed up on like recurring segments on TMZ or some shit like that. Slipshod and subpar and bad. Like this would have been released in theaters, a total flop. It makes sense that it ended up on HBO Now or HBO Max, pandemic or not.
Yeah, that shocked me. Like that truly shocked me. The idea of this movie in theaters, in like you know, in a normal world, like what a failure that would be. I feel like to go see this in a theater, like totally flat, totally dead. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah. It,
anytime you see a movie in theaters, you get your different people that think different parts are funny. And then, you know, you get your crowd laugh. Like, but it still is bad enough that you know that's not going to bring it to the level it needs to be.
I think the premise that, like, the original premise of the movie, right? Like, this man unstuck in time, playing off of, like, his heritage and his Jewish background, and then coming into, like, 21st century Brooklyn. Like, I think that's a fine premise for a movie. I think there's, like, an obvious route they could have taken that would actually be like a decent movie and with enough comedy in it, I think would actually be good. But for some reason they swerve out of both of those lanes, right? Like they don't go with the traditional story and instead they focus on like this weird narrative of him becoming this like Trump-like Twitter presence in mixed with this pickle business, right? But then it's also like there's not much even like attempts at comedy as far as like the plot goes or like taking big swings on like set pieces or anything. And so it's weird to me that like simultaneously this movie is like treading over like played out territory of the like, oh, we all look at our cell phones too much, right? Like that's the like main thing that's in comedy right now, I feel like, and it's not incredibly funny. But then like at the same time, it just diverts from what would be just a good classic kind of fish out of water movie and instead goes with this like weird episodic, like out of left field plot that just like doesn't work. To me, like it's just baffling why they went the way they did with this.
I mean, I'm pro directors and writers like seeing the easy way and finding a way around it, finding something, because of course you can't make the same movie over and over again. The obvious story is in this movie for like the first 30 minutes or so. But if you're gonna change, it up from like a well-worn formula, you better have a good reason to. You better bring the goods. And yeah, like we can get into the turns this movie takes and how it just doesn't understand even what Herschel could say to make himself be hated. Like once he becomes a Twitter personality, one of the things he does is like he just the use of the word sodomite would be like, you're done, that's it, go away. But then that is the trigger for him to be brought in front of like a big audience and talk about how Mary was a prostitute, which is like a standard thought amongst atheists. Like if you were to say that in front of like an average New York City crowd, no one would give a shit. But that's like what triggers him to be chased through the streets. So for with Simon Rich, like for a guy who's lived in New York his whole life, like it doesn't even seem like he understands the people that would be pissed off at his character. And if none of that works, if like the audience can't figure out what the problem is at like several steps deep and why these two have to even fight in the first place, which is also something of a mystery. Just like it's just a series of things that happen. Episodic, as you're saying, Pearson. Yeah, just the through line. It's a complete mess.
Right. And it's like there are themes they could have hit that I think in this premise would work, right? Like the idea of like being a Jewish man in the 21st, like a Jewish man in the 21st century who's single, looking for a wife, compared to your great-great-grandfather and his marriage that he lost because of a pickle accident, right? Like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, there's something there in a story, but they don't do that. Instead, they're like, "What if the pickle business was like this?" And it's just so bizarre.
They don't really have anything to teach each other either. Like Herschel has kind of something to teach Ben, but not vice versa. They can't even like split him up in a realistic way. Like Ben is nobody, but because he got in a fight, he finds himself on like the front page of some tech site. JR, what would you have to do as a computer programmer to get on the front page of like Wired or some shit?
If I did a murder spree while also working, and I might have been killing other programmers to like take job, you know, take like contracting jobs, that would probably do it.
You would have to be like Hugh Jackman in Swordfish or something.
Yeah.
Not a minor crime that's got nothing to do with your programming gig.
Yeah. I'm not about to fight one dude down the block and they'd be like, yo, this dude is wild out of his mind.
Yeah, that's such a perfect example. That's such a perfect example of the weird left turns this movie takes, like to go out of its way, but they're also just like illogical. Like, what is that? A man in Brooklyn fought a construction worker. So he's gone viral? Like, what does that mean? Like,
and the man was accompanied in the fight by his time-traveling great-grandfather, and that's not the lead headline. Time-traveling great-grandfather fights a cop. That's your headline.
And because of that...
And doesn't everybody fight a construction worker? Like, in Brooklyn, don't they just fight construction workers, like, every day? I thought that was, like...
Who's calling the cops in this scenario?
Like, in all honesty, the construction workers beat the shit out of those guys, and then they finish their day and go home.
Yeah. Not difficult.
Like, and, you know, I was thinking another thing they could have done, which, like, this changes the whole story, obviously, but they could have made this guy, so, you know, he's, like, not as hipstery as Brooklyn could be, right? But he's hipsterish. If I was Kenya Barris, they could have shown how he might have more in common with all the like super hipsters than his own grandson, because they're like doing a bunch of shit that like normal society doesn't do anymore. Like they're getting fucking straight razor haircuts, shaves, and like fermenting fucking kombucha in the corner of their bathroom or some shit I do. Let me say this. Things like it's not in my bathroom, but I'm just saying, like fermented kombucha, baking my own bread, you know, like all the hipster shit, you know, making your own pottery or whatever. And he's like, oh, you know, like, this is the shit I used to do. And then, like, they could have done that some way. And that probably ends up being a better movie than this.
That's kind of an old joke, too. Like, people from poor backgrounds coming to America and realizing both, like, the crazy amount of waste and the crazy amount of shit that we're concerned about. Like, what I immediately thought of was, like, an SNL sketch about, I want to say Christina Ricci was, like, a Yugoslavian refugee. And she was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and there was a question about what is anorexia or something to that effect. And she was like, couldn't wrap her head around what that even was in the first place, to like have food and not want to eat it. But yeah, the idea of Herschel, who had to like sew his own clothes and do all kinds of shit because there was no money, like coming to a place where there was a shit ton of money and people still feel the need to, not feel the need, but where it is now cool to be able to make your own socks or scarves or whatever, where that brings like cultural capital instead of just this is shit I need to do or I don't have a scarf. Like, yeah, there is something interesting there, more interesting than what is here, because what is here is just like finger pointing. Yeah. Don't these guys dress weird? Don't they value weird shit? It's never clear. Like, the pickles are not good. He's brining them and he doesn't have a secret recipe. It's all based on the cart that he's pushing. He's like, he's rustic, so that's why people like his pickles, even though his pickles have bird shit in them, and it's just pickles, water, and salt. That's it. That's all he's got.
There's such a classic movie concept of, like, why is this movie not about him and his great-grandson starting a pickle business, and then it's, like, trying to get bought up by an evil corporation.
And sure, yeah.
Like, the evil corporation's, like, the face of it is, like, Rob Lowe. And then at the end of the movie, they don't do it. You know, like, there's just so many simple things they could have done. And it's so weird. I just don't get it. I really do think if this was a TV show for a streaming service, I would understand it. Like, everything they do in this, the level of humor, the, like, plot of it, I think it all is on, like, a streaming show, like a Netflix comedy level. And I don't think that necessarily is good, but it makes more sense than what they did here by trying to make in theater movie comedy that, like, it just doesn't go above a Netflix streaming series, you know?
Yeah. The last thing I want to say about An American Pickle is that I feel like the exact same plot could be applied to, like, an inspirational Oscar type of movie where a Jewish man awakens 100 years after all the shit that happened to Jews in the 20th century and has to, you know, adjust to all of that. And where it is like a straight drama, and I don't know, there's like warm, golden scenes in synagogues or some shit like that. I don't know. I'm not Simon Rich. I can't write a movie. But then again, neither can he. American Pickle. This is not a good movie. I gave it a C-. I feel like that's too generous.
Yeah. Definitely. A little tease for later in this podcast, though. It's not even the worst movie I watched for this podcast. So that's...
Oh, well, that's amazing. Well, that's a big tease for listeners. But following last month's episode, we have just been inundated with mail praising our decision to add a game in between movies, specifically the movie game, wherein we take our resource of this gigantic spreadsheet of what the number is. I haven't added anything to it in a month. The number is still 3,918 movies. We randomly select one and we play the movie game. Movie game defined as pick a movie, actor in that movie, another movie that the actor is in, and so on and so on and so on until you run out. So we're going to do this again. The movie I selected is number 926, which is Kung Fu Panda. We're going to play this for 2 minutes. So we're going to go myself, then Pierce, then JR. And I'm going to go ahead and start with Dustin Hoffman. Yes, to Pierce, a movie that Dustin Hoffman is in.
I'll say Tootsie, one of his best.
Fuck. No idea. No idea who else is in that show.
I just watched this last week. Bill Murray is in Tootsie.
It's so good, right?
It was pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Bill Murray, I'll say a movie I really like, Rushmore.
Jason Schwartzman.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'll say he's in the Darjeeling Limited.
Owen Wilson? That's the only Wes Anderson I haven't seen, but I've seen the poster for it.
Okay. Well, Owen Wilson is in it. You, Me, and Dupree?
Fuck. I'm going to take a shot in the dark and say Kate Hudson is in that.
I think that's right. I think she's the girl.
Okay. Fantastic. She is in it.
Oh, wow. Good. Because now that I think about it, I don't even know that other guy's name. So that's good. Kate Hudson, What Women Want?
Helen Hunt.
Oh, I was really trying to trick you into saying Mel Gibson. Helen,
I don't think Kate Hudson is in What Women Want.
She's not?
Wait.
I Googled it. I've got nothing.
Oh, maybe I've got that wrong then.
All right.
All right.
Fantastic. We were just at 2 minutes, so I take the first round. Thank you, JR, for fact checking. I have never seen a woman one. I totally would have believed
it. I haven't either. I just know it's Mel Gibson. I thought that would be funny. Damn it.
I just thought it was like, my initial thought was, I think that's too old, is what I was, it's like 2000. And I was just trying to think, like, I don't think Kate Hudson would have been in that movie.
Our next movie is Palm Springs, which was released streaming on Hulu. This is directed by another newcomer, Max Barbacow. This is starring Andy Samberg, Kristen Milioti, and J.K. Simmons. It is a time loop movie. The twist on this one being that we start Palm Springs in the middle of a time loop, not the beginning. Andy Samberg's character Niles is stuck on the same day, waking up at a wedding in the middle of the desert. And it's Kristen Milioti's character. She gets wrapped up in his time loop, and she is the one who has to get brought into it by him. Initial thoughts on Palm Springs, JR?
Absolutely delightful. I really enjoyed it. B+. I'm a time loop person. You know, I love time travel movies and anything about that. You know, normally they're a little more sci-fi-y with it, but this still works for me. I thought everything about it was delightful. J.K. Simmons coming in and randomly showing up to kill this guy was great for me. Also thought the plot was done well. You know, them trying to find meaning, like actually find meaning in it, and since they were going to have to live with it, and I thought it was done very well. Enjoyed it a lot.
Pierce, Palm Springs?
Yeah, I think this, of the three movies we, you know, the three streaming comedies, this is the example of it done right. Like, the humor is there, which is, like, first and foremost, right? Like, it's an actually funny movie, and it's enjoyable to watch. But I think it works as far as, like, the scale and the story. Like, it is got the right amount of, like, momentum to the movie so that you're hooked and that you're always paying attention without having to be, like, an over-the-top comedy. But then I think, as well, it's just, like, it works on a couple other levels. Like, it's a good romance. It's a good summer movie, even though I don't even think it's set in the summer, but it works as a summer movie. And like I said, like I think everything you're looking for in a like at home streaming comedy, which seems to be what we get most of these days anyway, like this is the example of it done right. It takes a big premise, it has humor to it, it has romance, and it's watchable. And so, you know, that's the key criteria.
Yeah, I will echo the praise. This is, as JR says, delightful. This is a very fun movie. I enjoy Andy Samberg in most, well, he's been in a lot of Adam Sandler movies, so I wouldn't say everything he's done, but when he is allowed to be silly like he is in this movie, he is one of the better ones, and Kristen Milioti is fantastic. We'll talk about her a little later. The time loop movies, you know, you have some, like Groundhog Day, obviously, is the standard, and you got your, like, Edge of Tomorrows, and I've never seen Happy Death Days, but those seem to be, those have a good reputation, those two movies, for what they are. It's, you can't do them all the time. There's one every few years or so, if not less, but you can see why this particular penny keeps turning up. It's, you can just find a lot of fun in it, and this movie, it has the closest in common with Groundhog Day, but it's a little. I would say it's lighter. It's not as dark as that movie gets. It's also not as earnestly romantic. Like, I thought of this as like a Gen X Groundhog Day, where these people are like luxuriating in their meaninglessness, whereas Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, like, the goal of that movie is not only to break out of the time loop, but to, you know, spark a romance with Andie MacDowell. And it's similar, but it's just, it's not treated as like this grand, serious, romantic pursuit here. Like, sure, they do end up together, but that's not the key to them get to the characters getting out of the time loop. Like, no one's magically watching Bill Murray or Andy Samberg and waiting for him to achieve some level of personal growth, and then he can go about his day again. Like, they break out of this through science. And the love is just a happy coincidence. Yeah, it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. It's coming back to Kristen Milioti. I'm not really familiar with her. I know she was in How I Met Your Mother, and I mentioned in my review that really the only role that I knew her from is from the second season of Fargo, in which she is very good, but it's like she's like ninth or tenth on the call sheet in that TV series. And she this is like a star-making performance, I think. I don't know exactly how long she's been working, but she should work more based on this. She's completely running away with it. She's got a great face, giant eyes, and she's like accentuating all of these like physical comedic performances with like little clicks and little snaps and little exclamations that, if she wasn't such a talented physical actress, would seem hammy, but she makes it seem like natural, and like she's carving this role out such that only she could have done it. And she's great. She's absolutely great.
I think for like the Groundhog Day structure to work, right? Like in Groundhog Day, obviously Bill Murray is like a one of a kind ethos, and everyone wants to watch him all the time. And the same thing goes for Palm Springs. Like to make this movie like ultimately watchable, you have to want to spend time with those two characters, right? Mm-hmm. And I think like Andy Samberg is a proven talent who sometimes can be too hokey, but I think he's pretty perfect in this movie as far as like dialing it, you know, not too high but not too low. And then Kristen Milioti, like, right, like you're saying, she's both of them together just perfectly fit in a way where, for a movie that relies on them so heavily, this, like, you have to want to spend time with them, and this movie delivers that. Like the charming parts of this movie, you know, like the montage, like the dance montages and that kind of stuff, that really works. And it's kind of the difference. Like Groundhog Day has it to an extent where you get to watch Bill Murray just like have fun with it, but Palm Springs does it in a way where it's actually fun. Like it's a whole other feeling of fun. Like that montage scene is just like, I think, the best of the movie, and wanting to be there with them and like be in this moment is a accomplishment that the movie hits on.
Yeah, she can meet Sandberg for silliness, and she can also deliver in a way that he kind of can't on the more desperate and serious parts of the movie, partly because we don't see him being desperate. Like, this is R-rated in a way that like Groundhog Day was not. And it could have indulged in like Niles going on a killing spree or savagely committing suicide and seeing the aftermath of all of that. It had the license to do that. It could have done that, and it doesn't do that because it's not that. It's just not interested in being that dark. And what darkness there is, it puts on mostly her with just how shitty she feels about herself. Having like the day she keeps waking up to is having just cheated on her sister's fiance to be on the, you know, night. On the day of his wedding, not the night before his wedding. And so, she does great finger guns, and she does great like self-hatred. She just can do no wrong here.
I'm probably going to be in the minority here and say I don't particularly like, I'm like, I've never just really enjoyed watching Groundhog Day. Like I'll, you know, it's one of those things, like I watched it, I was like, this is a good movie. But I've never been like, okay, you know, throw Groundhog Day on, or I probably would roll past it. This, I would watch this again before I watch Groundhog Day. I enjoyed it more. Maybe because, right, I'm a millennial. This is Gen X. Like you said, it's Gen X. So it aims right towards me of if I was living, if I end up at a wedding like this, I might end up looking exactly like Andy Samberg.
Sure, yeah.
Doing this exact shit.
How much, yeah. Who's got the drugs and how can I get them?
Yeah.
And every day is a video game. Like Bill Murray winning video games, yep. Andy Samberg group with video games. Yep. It's an easy...
Drunkenly rolling up and taking over the maid of honor speech. Like, yes. That's exactly what I would do. That's 100% me. Like, and I would probably do it every night. Not just like every once in a while. I would give a different, more ridiculous speech as many times as I could just to see
how it would go. You got to get it exactly right. What are you even going for? Are you trying to freak everybody out? Are you trying to ruin everybody's day? Are you trying to get like a standing ovation? Get them all.
Yeah. Try them all. Exactly. Say something wild. Get up there. I'd probably murder some people. Like, I mean, I'd do everything. And so this was like right up my alley.
You mentioned going on a killing spree. I think one of the better parts of this movie is just like a single line that Andy Samberg has where you have to live with the pain. Like, the pain is real. The pain for yourself is real. And you also have to like mentally live, or at least how I took it, because I imagine that he did, like, I don't know, murder some people here or there just to try it out and see what that was like. Like, the pain of that is real also. Like, he wouldn't have just gone to sleep immediately after killing somebody. He would have had to sit around and think about it for a little bit and live in the aftermath until going back to sleep, and then he still remembers it. So it's not just pure like nihilism, even though some part of Niles's character does just want to like sit in the pool for several hours every day and then get as fucked up as possible as the day goes on. He does still like not want to make it hard on himself in a way that I think is really modern and specific to that generational divide, but he doesn't want to try very hard at anything. Like, he's never had sex with the bride because that would take a lot of work, and not even just the bride. He says trying to hook up with anybody at the wedding takes a lot of work, so he doesn't really do it that much. They're like a lot of these time loop movies. I can't speak for Happy Death Day. Again, maybe that one's deeper than I give it credit for, but there is just a lot of room for depth in there based on what's implied by what the characters have gone through. Like, who knows how long he's actually been doing this? I don't know what the number that people throw out in Groundhog Day is. It's like hundreds of years worth of time. It's some crazy number. And just in that period, like, being able to, like for a movie to communicate how difficult that must be and how irritating it must be, is always really impressive with these time loop movies. Just the way that it can really place you in the protagonist's head. Like, just from the start, from the immediate start of Miles' first day, or not his first day, but when you first meet him, and if you haven't watched the trailers or anything, or don't have a general sense of what the movie is. Just having to wake up with his awful girlfriend every day and have her hear about this wedding that you've gone to who knows how many times. Just like, yeah, awful. Just how truly terrible and torturous that kind of thing is. Like, it's the combination of the Cher song and Ned Ryerson for Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. But the girlfriend here is just doing so much work to communicate how really terrible it is to just wake up with her every day.
With Palm Springs, Groundhog Day obviously kind of like invented this to a degree, but like Palm Springs and Edge of Tomorrow, they both then use that, like, what could be just a gimmick, they, like you're saying, like, they use it to a great effect. Like, this the rom-com aspects of Palm Springs like get amplified in the idea of having to like wake up and spend eternity with somebody else, right? Like, that idea is explored in the movie in like a fascinating way. And same thing with like Edge of Tomorrow, right? Like, what if we did an action movie but with this gimmick to it. And I think both of them are good examples of how they take the groundhog structure and they actually do something with it. So yeah, it's a well-used gimmick.
Palm Springs is a very good movie. A lot of fun. Great summer movie. A comedy that would have worked in theaters. Everybody should watch it. For our next round of the movie game, we selected 380, which is The Prestige. And I'm going to say Scarlett Johansson. We'll go to Pierce again, and then JR.
ScarJo. I'll say Lost in Translation.
Okay.
God damn it. That white guy, man. That Bill Murray?
I hit you twice in a row with Bill Murray, and I was hoping you got it this time.
Bill Murray was in St. Vincent.
Was that... That one's tricky. Was that also... Was that Melissa McCarthy?
It was indeed.
Oh. Total guess.
Melissa McCarthy was in Spy.
She was in Spy with Jason Statham?
Yeah.
Statham. I'll say his best role, Furious 7.
Ludacris.
Hell yeah.
Ludacris was in Crash.
Oh, fuck. Forgot about that.
Now I'm just thinking that healed America.
I'll say Michael Pena.
Was in the movie Chips.
With Dax Shepard.
Oh, shit.
Damn.
I got to think of another Dax Shepard vehicle. Let me think. Hold on.
I mean, fuck, so do I.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think you have one either.
I got you.
Shit. He's in Employee of the Month. There's a movie where he plays a checkout guy.
Yeah, Employee of the Month.
It is?
And I'm pretty sure Dane Cook is in that as well.
He is. Dane Cook is in that and nothing else, as far as I can tell. So I'm out.
So, John, Dane Cook is in the movie Dan in Real Life.
Oh, my God.
Not a terrible movie. Yeah. I don't mind it.
That's the Steve Carell movie where he's like laying on the pants. Yeah. Right?
An iconic poster.
Yes. Like, it's not a terrible movie. It is Steve Carell. So then I'll say from Steve Carell, Evan Almighty.
Yep.
Evan Almighty. Okay. Then I have to assume Morgan Freeman is God in that too. I don't remember.
Did he come back for the sequel? I honestly
can't. He did, yes.
Okay. All right, Morgan Freeman. Let's go with Morgan Freeman. His best role, the movie Wanted.
With James McAvoy? Is that?
Yep.
Yeah, yep. He curves the bullet.
Yep. Let's, love that movie. Let's go deep. Let's go deep in our memories.
I'll try and spike it with this one. James McAvoy is in Atonement.
And Atonement is... I have no idea who's in Atonement. I was thinking of... No idea.
That's your Keira Knightley. That's your Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, I've never seen that movie.
Pierce on the board.
Honestly, y'all, I'm really impressed with myself that I came up with a Dax Shepard movie. That really shocked me.
Just think of every dumb movie you've ever seen. Like, he's in Idiocracy. I'm pretty sure he's in
Idiocracy. We got one more round of the movie game coming up after we discuss Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. This is a movie directed by David Dobkin, he of Wedding Crashers. This was released directly on the Netflix, although it likely would have been another theatrical release. Stars Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams as an Icelandic duo, the titular Fire Saga, who are desperate to get into the Eurovision Song Contest, hence the title. initial thoughts about Eurovision Song Contest, Pierce?
Well, when I come on this podcast, John, I try and have something to say that's maybe eloquent or poignant.
Sure, sure.
I don't for this movie. This movie just fucking sucks. Like, what is this? Like, seriously, like, it's a zero. I'm not going to lie. I did not even finish it. I quit after the, like, non-comedic sing-along medley of, like, pop songs.
Where yep.
Like, jokes. Like, I kept listening to see if they were going to sing, like a funny parody of a song, or if there's
going to be
something funny. And no, like, this movie is a net zero. I understand, again, like, there's a premise here that is not, like, too foreign to, like, Will Ferrell's, you know, traditional shtick, right? Like, this isn't that different from, like, Ricky Bobby or Blades of Glory, where it's, like, wacky underdog outsider joins this competition and blah, 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 right? But this movie, like, doesn't even... One, like, it half-asses the plot, like... Classic, it's like the streaming level of movie that just like has no budget behind it, clearly. Or when they do have a budget, they wasted it on like dumb concerts or whatever. But then, like, it just doesn't have jokes to it. Like, at least American Pickle had like attempts at humor. This movie, like, I didn't even understand where the attempt was coming from. So, yeah, this movie's a fucking F from me.
Yikes. JR, Eurovision Song Contest.
I kind of enjoyed this movie.
I'm glad we are not all in agreement again. Fantastic.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I didn't think it was like amazing or anything, but for what it was trying to be, which was a basically like a Step Brothers dumb type movie, I thought it did that well. I went in expecting that, right? Because you're like, you know, this is Will Ferrell now. You're like, okay, this is going to be a dumb fucking movie. It was a dumb movie. I enjoyed it as a dumb movie. Will Ferrell, definitely the worst part about it. Because
yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, he's just being Will Ferrell. Is Will Ferrell like a human, or is he just his characters now at this point? But, like, everyone else around him, I thought was great. The dude that was the Russian singing dude that was hooking up with his, or he thought was hooking up with his girl, that guy was hilarious to me. I don't know why. But just like, it for what it was, it did it well. Made like C plus, B minus, I don't know. Something in there. But I enjoyed it. You know, I'm not going in looking for Citizen Kane. You know, I'm going in expecting a stupid movie that's going to make me laugh a little bit, and that's what it did.
I'm closer to JR, pretty much exactly where JR is. This movie is probably 40 minutes too long. It is somehow over 2 hours long, a movie about this. A singing competition, that is crazy to me. It's not too surprising, coming from David Dobkin, I think, the same of Wedding Crashers. Wedding Crashers is really long for what it is. Something about this guy. He just leaves the editors. I don't know. He pays them salary instead of by the hour. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with this guy. But his movies are crazy long. And this one is no exception. But I like the singing parts of it. I like how generally theatrical a lot of it is. I really liked Rachel McAdams. There's and Dan Stevens as well, the guy who played the Russian. For the parts of the movie that needed to exist, I was generally on board. And the parts of the movie that have no reason to exist, I was desperately rooting to get back to the necessary parts. But yeah, like JR is saying, I came in with pretty low expectations based on where Will Ferrell is in his career now. And his performance notwithstanding, the movie more or less met those pretty low expectations. The only reason this movie really exists is because of Ferrell's fascination with Eurovision. He married a Swedish woman. They have three perfect little Aryan children. And this has just been part of their relationship, is that they watch the Eurovision Song Contest every year. But I'm not necessarily clear after watching this movie, what differentiates it from any other talent competition? Like, what's so special exactly about this contest that this movie that is specifically about it is selling to people? Unclear. Did you guys, I don't know, do you have any familiarity? I only know about this specific thing because of, I want to say, a John Oliver segment from several years ago. So I had expectations of, like, this is a really crazy, over-the-top, super gay, super campy singing competition. And it was it's kind of that, and but I don't know. It could have been campier. It could have been gayer. What did you guys think of, like, the Eurovision contest itself coming out of this movie? Prior experience, if any, and ongoing interest, which I suspect the answer to.
Well, so I go ahead, Pierce.
No, you got it. You go. I've done that like twice.
I didn't even know this was a real thing. Like, this movie happened, and I just was like, okay, this is fucking ridiculous. And then a person I follow, unironically, having to do nothing with the movie, tweeted about how they were just casually eating dinner watching the 2016 Eurovision Championship, okay? And I was like, what the fuck is this? Is real, you know? Like, what is happening? I watched the entire thing. It is just ridiculous. Like, it's just, it's not, like, crazy over the top, but it's just enough over the top that you're like, this is fucking ridiculous. Like, these people are literally dressed like, you know, like, these dudes have lions, or people dressed like lions dance behind them. It's like a dumb, a constant, everyone that comes out is, like, trying to be, like, a Super Bowl performer and have some dancing shark behind them or something. It's ridiculous.
Does the movie meet how crazy the real thing is, or is the real thing crazier?
I thought the one I watched, I don't know if it was 2016 or whatever, the one I watched was a little bit crazier.
That's a real damning mark against the movie, because the thing, Will Ferrell should know that a big part of comedy is, like, escalation, like, bigger until you can't go any bigger and you have to, like, turn the lights out on a place. Like, he's an improv guy. Okay. That's kind of a knock against this movie. Pierce, any thoughts on the Eurovision Song Contest itself?
I mean, like, I'd maybe heard of it, but never registered it before. But I was, like, familiar with, like, ABBA. And, like, I've been to Stockholm before. And so that Euro pop music, like, I'm aware of. But, like, I don't think this movie necessarily evoked some, like, clear, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, the way that Talladega Nights, and maybe it's because I'm more familiar with NASCAR culture, but, like, Talladega Nights is, like, ingrained in this culture, both, like, plot-wise and comedically. But, like, the Eurovision stuff was just, like, a blank template for me. Like, I didn't understand, like, what it was subverting or what it was spoofing. Like, not because I wasn't familiar with Eurovision, but because, like, the movie didn't, like, I didn't understand what was I supposed to be laughing at certain moments. Maybe it is that I'm just, like, American and I don't know Eurovision, but also, like, who is this movie for exactly? Like, are we all supposed to know Eurovision so well that we're like, oh, yeah, like, that one character is such a great parody of, like, somebody else, you know? Like, I don't know if the movie did its job in that sense.
Yeah, like the party sing-along part that you mentioned, the other performers that the cinematic language is like, oh my gosh, they got this person and this person and this person. It's like a naked music video in the middle of this movie, and I was more or less on board with it because my assumption going in was that at least as far as the music was going to be concerned, this was going to be like an earnest, hard on the sleeve Europop recreation of this thing, and that sing along was exactly that. But those people that the camera cuts to, like, coming out of limousines and joining this party, are actual Eurovision stars who Jolliver segments notwithstanding, like, I feel like this has no penetration in the United States to the point where we don't even know that it's happening, much less who the stars are. So, yes, I completely agree. Being conflicted and confused about who the audience is, I think, is exactly right. Exactly.
This movie is, though, right? Like we were saying with American Pickle, like, American Pickle felt to me like a streaming sitcom. But, like, JR, you said, like, it felt like an SNL sketch that, like, went on too long. But, like, this Eurovision is, like, a Geico commercial that's, like, cross-branding with, like, the Winter Olympics. You know, like if that was this whole thing of, like, oh, yeah, like, Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams, they're Norwegian singers. And look at this funny, like, commercial. Or, like, here's a skit they did for the opening ceremonies. Like, that I would understand. Like, the whole movie, though, I don't know what more from this movie I was supposed to get than, like, their accents.
Will Ferrell, I don't know what happened to him. I don't remember the last time he made a good movie. His movies with, like, Get Hard and Daddy's Home and Holmes and Watson, all these movies that he's not working with good directors anymore, good writers. He's working with Ethan Cohen and David Dobkin. These, like, subpar C-level guys compared to Adam McKay and the types that he used to work with. I mean, I'm not necessarily who know who directed Blades of Glory, but that movie is would be head and shoulders amongst anything.
Yeah. That it's at least a movie. Their distinction is career, where, like, because, like, even those other movies, though, that you named, like, his recent ones, are still, though, like, full-scale movies that have, like, other stars in them. And, then, like, I think the issue really with his late career is that he just skews younger now. Like, I think Get Hard and Daddy's Home are obviously for, like, kids where, you know, Step Brothers and everything before that, the Adam McKay stuff is not. But then it's, like, for me, what's like, troubling with this one is that it goes back to not just the Eurovision audience thing, but, like, audience in general. Like, there's not, I don't know, there's adult humor, obviously, but it isn't, like, a sophisticated enough movie for myself as an adult to say, like, oh, right, like, this is worth watching. Like, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's just, like, you have to do something more than just the occasional dick joke to, like, make me invest in this comedy, and Eurovision just didn't do that. And it's weird that a Will Ferrell comedy, you know, they used to be the cornerstone, and now for some reason that's just totally lost. Like, it's weird.
I think he's falling into, like, an Adam Sandler type place where he's just cashing paychecks. Like, everything here is just incredibly lazy from him. Where it's really obvious when he's doing improv, but his improv is just like mirroring back to Rachel McAdams pretty much, or Dan Stevens, or whoever he's opposite with. Even like his physical bits weren't funny. Like, give me simultaneous golf club smashings with him and John C. Reilly like his pratfalls they're not played for laughs. Like, he is actually just falling. And
you mean the big comedic set piece where they play a concert and he's on strings and then he falls from the strings? You didn't think that was hilarious thing? Like, where they're playing a song that isn't funny? Like, it's so bizarre to me. This, like American Pickle is bizarre because they made weird choices. This movie made, like, no choices. Like, this movie just didn't even try
it. That's a fair distinction.
Yeah. Like, compare it to, like, Popstar, right? Like, Popstar is in a similar realm of, like, a musical comedy that is supposed to be spoofing a genre, and it, like, they actually use the songs in the movie as, like, funny songs, and there's jokes to it, and, like, everything in that movie is subversive, whereas this one, like, they just didn't take those chances where they could have done something funny, and it's really, again, it's just baffling.
It's got to be the cultural thing, like, straight up. We don't know Eurovision, so this literally... It's the only thing that can explain it. Mm-hmm. So what Pierce is wanting is, it's got to be that this is doing perfect subversion and satire. We just don't know what it's satire because we don't we're not deep in the Eurovision lifestyle. You know, we know all about Justin Bieber. We've seen this guy pissing in the corner of a into a bush in the corner of a 5-star restaurant. We know who he is. We don't. I didn't even know Eurovision existed until even weeks after I saw this movie.
And like Popstar is making fun of Justin Bieber in a way that this movie is not making fun of Eurovision. Like, this is reverent of Eurovision. There are no jokes at Eurovision's expense. Like, it loves it. So the jokes have to come from Ferrell's incompetence, which is just only going to get you so far. And like, he's just done this so much that he can't add anything new to this type of character that he so often plays. And again, like, I love Anchorman, Blaze of Glory, Semi-Pro is underrated. Like, all that stuff is like, he's just run the thread out on this specific character. And like, compared to Rachel McAdams and Dan Stevens, who are not doing the same thing, you know, like, they're not doing the dozenth iteration of the same character like Ferrell is. I thought they were both much, much better and like saved the movie in a lot of ways. Yeah. Especially Rachel McAdams, who is just consistently good in everything she does.
You asked earlier, when's the last good movie Will Ferrell was in? 2010. He was in The Other Guys, Megamind, and Everything Must Go. And so I've got his
filmography up here too. Like, he's like, the Lego Movie is, you know, like a voice performance.
Yeah, mostly. Same thing with Megamind, but as far as like him acting, it's gotta be The Other Guys as the last good one.
People kind of like The House. People are kind of coming around to that.
Is The Other Guys, is that the last McKay comedy that he did as well?
He did The Campaign, which I don't think was very good.
Interesting. Yeah, because I think part of it too is, and all three of these movies that we've talked about tonight are like emblematic of this, of like the shifting production of comedy movies away from like big, you know, budgets and things like that, that like now you don't get an Adam McKay comedy movie anymore. Because if he wants to make the movie he wants, it has to be like technically a drama, right? So he's like, both because of his interests, but also like, just because that's where the money is. I think you don't get Eurovision with like the same, you know, ensemble cast and director behind it as you would like an Anchorman or Talladega Nights or whatever. So it seems like it's that twofold thing of like, the people he was working with now, like McKay, aren't making these movies anymore. And then in general, the money's not there. So then it's forced on the streaming with like, where it's just like him, Dan Stevens, and Rachel McAdams like doing voices, I guess. I don't know.
It doesn't work. And like, increasingly with Netflix especially, like, creators are always so grateful when like the studio or the producers or whoever don't have notes for them, like, oh, they just let us do whatever we wanted to. But at a certain point, you're going to experience diminishing returns on that, when like, sometimes maybe people do need someone looking over their shoulder to say, can we do better? And this might be one of those examples. Like, Netflix, I feel like they just want content they could give a shit what does and doesn't work or is not, or is and isn't good, whatever. That's not what they're trying to do necessarily. And
they're not even trying to keep the shit people tell them is good.
Yeah, maybe. And again, like this, I do kind of feel like we're somewhat, especially Pierce, but even myself and JR, who were just lukewarm at best, I do think this movie has some pretty strident fans based on like film Twitter type of conversations.
I picked up on that.
I don't get it necessarily, but
it baffled me when I started watching it. I'd heard like some, I think part of it is the hype around just like, there's nothing on and there's no
news. Sure.
But like, then even watching it, I was like, but that doesn't explain necessarily all of it. I think there is just some people who just like to see Will Ferrell like go back to playing a goofy character, like whatever. I think he is naturally funny doing whatever he does, but it just like wasn't enough for me.
Yeah, this is a C for me. We went 1 for 3 as far as comedies go this last round. Before I announce our next round, we're going to play our final game of the our final round of the movie game, and we selected, or the random number generator came up with number 614, and that movie is Amistad. So I'm going to start with Jaimin Hunsu to Pierce.
I'll say Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure.
I will say Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel's in Boiler Room.
Oh, geez. Is Boiler Room the movie where Ben Affleck gives that speech?
It is indeed.
Cool. That's all I know about that movie.
That speech, that's good. Okay, so I got to do a movie with Ben Affleck. The Way Back.
Huh.
I got somebody.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
I don't think anybody's actually watched this movie, which is why, why I said it.
Oh, I saw it.
It's canon in the youth basketball coach movie, you know, Hall of Fame.
Fuck. Oh, what is that guy's name? I can't believe I'm doing this. Al Madrigal.
Damn it.
Yes.
Well, now I have to think of an Al Madrigal movie.
You do, yes.
Oh.
And so do I. Awesome.
Yeah, there's no way you know one. Jeez. Yeah, I do not know one.
JR, Al Madrigal.
No, we got to do a different one. We got to play this.
I mean, now it comes back to me, and I couldn't think of anything either. So, JR, you said The Way Back, correct?
Yeah, we can't win off the second movie. Like,
right? But when
that's what happened. That's what happened.
I guess
you... JR, you won. Well, we're tied at one, so we have to do a tiebreaker.
Okay. Okay.
So
that's 15, wild.
15-28 is.
It doesn't look like this guy's been in anything, by the way.
I'm sure he showed up in, like, the background.
Yeah, night school.
1528 is Ernest Saves Christmas. So we're going to see how long we can name Ernest movies. And I'm going to start with Jim Varney.
For reference, is that the guy that plays Ernest? Just so I don't make
no.
That's not Ernest.
Yes, Vern is the guy that you never see. Ernest is Jim Varney. Yes, that is correct.
Is it? Geez, is it Ernest Saves Christmas? Is that the movie?
That's where we started.
Oh shit! So then, okay. So Ernest goes to jail.
Great.
You have. Jeez. Wait, what the fuck? And yeah, I have to say, Ernest Scared Stupid.
You have to name someone in Ernest Goes to Jail.
Okay. Yeah, that's fucking dumb. No, we're doing. Go to the next one. Fuck that shit. Give us a new movie to start, because this is trash ass. Okay.
Yeah.
I will die on this hill.
That's fair. Here's what we'll do. Instead of just potentially picking another one of, like, say, Cooker's direct to VCR horror movies, because that's always a risk when you select randomly. We've got Ernest Saves Christmas. I said Jim Varney. Pierce said Ernest. Which one did you say? Goes to Jail?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to keep naming Ernest movies until we run out of Ernest movies. Whoever survives the longest wins. They are Ernest movie. Go.
Well, okay. So Ernest goes... I don't know, man. God damn it. See, this is what I'm talking about. But
Jair is out. Shit. Now I'm out. Pierce, another Ernest movie?
Manchester by the Sea. That movie was really Earnest. It had some.
That is true. There was some raw emotion in that. I think, yeah, we're going to give it to Jay.
No, I don't know any Ernest movies.
No more Ernest movies. Okay.
Let's do a real round.
No. JR, you won.
You really made that rule.
Tiebreaker rounds. Anything goes in tiebreaker rounds. Anything can happen. So, JR, congratulations. You won this month's round of the movie game. Well done.
So, I just want to point out, we could have easily gotten out of this Ernest shit because he's in Toy Story, right?
He is. Next round of movies, we have selected The Social Network and the new Charlie Kaufman movie, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, and the previous year's Rian Johnson movie, Knives Out. So potentially three fantastic movies to discuss at this time next month. But in the meantime, you can check us out at MunichMovie.club for reviews of these three comedies and many, 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 many more reviews of other movies, primarily written by me, but not all written by me. And you can also like us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Munich Movie Club. We are also on Instagram at Munich Movie Club, where we keep everybody posted on as far as what we have put out new on the website. You guys want to plug yourselves, Pierce?
Yeah, I have a letterbox that people can check out.
I like
letterbox. It's a good website. I believe my letterbox is P Bauer, Bauer 404. I'm pretty sure that's it. But yeah, I post a couple little blurbs and I make some lists. So check it out.
I am also on Letterboxd at John_Kissel. I never bring that up. I don't know why I don't. JR, anything?
I am not on Letterboxd, even though I need to make an account because I do like making lists.
It's pretty great.
In about a week, find me on Letterboxd at JRPetersJR. And find me on Instagram at TheLastBeeBender.
Some pretty cool bee pictures.
I do beekeeping, so pretty fun stuff. Until you find out you're allergic.
Yikes. I think that worked out pretty well for Macaulay Culkin and my girl. You should be fine.
Okay.
Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thank you.
Peace.
Have a good night.